The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
I want to be clear to folks in this region who are thinking about making that dangerous trek to the United States-Mexico border. Do not come. Do not come.
What does she have against brown people? Is, I guess, what I'm wondering. If President Trump goes down to Guatemala, says, hey, don't come, you're going to be stopped. Well, he said that. Not that long ago. And of course, out come all the accusations. You're racist. You hate brown people. We'll come to that here in just a second. We welcome you back to the Trumpet Daily. You can get to the live stream of this program at our very own website, thetrumpet.com/live. We also broadcast the audio stream through CRN Digital Talk Radio. That's CRN channel number 3 on the CRN network. And you should also know that we have a weekend edition now of this program. It's recorded in advance Friday afternoons, and then it plays over the air here in central Oklahoma and central Arizona as well. And then it's posted at our website. And of course, you can get to all of the podcasts, all of the videos on demand at thetrumpet.com/live. As well, I should mention too that Celtic Throne continues. They are heading out to Austin, Texas, early tomorrow morning, and so the entire crew, the cast, will be down there in Austin Wednesday evening, tomorrow night. So if you're anywhere in Central Texas, make sure that you try to get out there for that show. You can find out about tickets and ticket prices at our website, Celtic Throne. .com. That's CelticThrone.com. If I refer to any literature on today's program, by the way, the toll-free phone number that you can call if you're in the United States or Canada or the Caribbean, you can call us at 1-866-930-3024. So going back to 2018, you might remember the news of the big caravan coming up through Central America and President Trump sounding the alarm and saying, look, don't come. You're going to be turned away at the border. Here's what he had to say. Clip 6.
So let me begin by stating that these illegal caravans will not be allowed into the United States. And they should turn back now. And we've already dispatched for the border the United States military. And they will do the job.
They will do the job, he said. Time magazine. They wrote this in August of 2019. Trump claims that he doesn't have a problem with immigrants so long as they enter this country the right way. In that same October tweet, he wrote, this is quoting Trump, please go back. You will not be admitted into the United States unless you go through the legal process. And this was Time's take on President Trump's position. It says, but the election of Donald Trump, his racist and harmful lies about immigrants, the policies enacted by his administration, and the violence he has incited against brown people have removed the rose-colored glasses through which I once viewed this country. He's a racist! He's a racist because he wants border security. Just about like every other world leader, except for the fake Biden administration, of course. They want it wide open. And so that's why Kamala Harris, she goes down there. She did say, do not come, as I just played for you. But listen to, you contrast this with what President Trump said. I mean, he actually made the statement, and then he backed it up with some action. And that's exactly what is not happening with the words, the weak words, really. Listen to Kamala Harris again from yesterday, clip 2.
The United States will continue to enforce our laws and secure our border. There are legal methods by which migration can and should occur. But we, as one of our priorities, will discourage illegal migration. And I believe if you come to our border, you will be turned back.
We really discourage it. We discourage illegal immigration, and I believe you might be turned back. Pretty weak, as Joe Biden would say. Come on, man. Come on. I believe you'll be turned back. Well, listen to Candace Owens. She was on, I believe it was Tucker last night, explaining, you know, what's happening here. And I think the most interesting part of this little collection of statements from her is she points out just how organized the illegal immigration is, particularly once you get to the United States. If you get in, you've made it to the finish line, and then you have people helping you on that side. You have all the human traffickers. Not that it's not dangerous, but they take the money, they deliver you to the border, you make it across, and then you get help from the other side. And you're distributed throughout the United States. She's, again, commenting on Tucker's show. This is clip 5.
And I actually interviewed about a month and a half ago an illegal immigrant, actually on a path to citizenship now, thanks to marriage. And they were very honest with me, and they said that during this journey, and they particularly came from Guatemala, that it was more harrowing to go through Mexico because the Mexico police kept trying to stop the flow of illegal immigration. And once you get to America, it's essentially a finish line because it's so organized and it's so systemic. She entered in through California, and then 150 of them were broken up into three states. Those three states were Texas, Tennessee, and Virginia. And when Trump got into office and started talking about stopping the flow, they really got upset and they got very angry because there has been something that has been going on in terms of trafficking over the border to change demographics of this country for a long time. It is not a conspiracy theory. It is the truth. And Americans need to wake up into it because you are correct. It is an invasion.
It's an invasion. It's an attack, she says. And the fact that they're then spread out in the three states she mentioned, well, I mean, Virginia's blue now, but why would they go to Texas and Tennessee after coming in? And why not stay in California? They're spread out. And as she indicates, they're being sent in a lot of cases to states that used to be more red. It's an attack, and it's not an attack coming from brown people. It's an attack from the radical left. It's an attack from the radical Democrat Party that wants to change the demographics forever, just like they want to cheat. They want to get it to the point where cheating is legal. They're attacking the United States of America from every direction. And the crisis at the border right now, it could not be worse. That was obviously Fox News. But listen to what CNN reported. Just this week. This is clip 4.
As she visits these countries, this is one of the big issues.
As she visits these countries, this is one of the big issues. In the so-called Northern Triangle, trying to convince countries slow the route of migration to the U.S. border. These are encounters in April. Just in April, more than 178,000 migrants encountered at the border. And if you look at this through recent fiscal years, 2019 is blue, 2020 is green. You see 2021, an increasing problem at the borders.
178,000 just in April, and you saw the graph there, so much worse than last year and the year before. Donald Trump came in and said, stop, don't come, and then he locked down the border, or at least he did a much better job of it than what we're seeing today. But that's why the words are so weak. I believe you might be, you talk about sending a signal, a message to the people of Guatemala and elsewhere. The president of Guatemala said it's Biden's fault. He's losing his people because Joe Biden, this illegitimate administration, he wants the borders open. This is from The Times. In the UK, I believe. It says migrants from as far away as India and Romania are driving a surge in the numbers attempting to enter the United States through Mexico. You got people coming to Mexico from all over the world because they know they can get into the United States of America. No problem. It's says last month, Border Patrol agents encountered more than 33,000 people from nations other than Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador, which have historically been the source of most arrivals. So those four nations, you heard John King, 178,000 total. 33,000 are coming from other nations besides those immediately south of America's border. Unbelievable. And then she goes down there and offers this weak plea. You know, please don't come. We really want to discourage it. We'd like to encourage you to do it through legal means. And I do believe you might be turned back. I can't be sure, but I do believe you might be turned back if you get to the U.S. border. It says here, that figure, this is back to the illegals coming from all over the world. It says that figure was up by more than a third since March and nearly four times higher than the 9,000 people from outside Mexico and the Northern Triangle of Central America who arrived in January. So you had 9,000 people in January coming from all over the world through Mexico to get into the U.S. Now it's 33,000, all totaled 178,000 in 1 month. In 1 month. Listen again. Well, let me just take you to one final statement from Kamala Harris in her trip to Guatemala yesterday, clip three.
So let's discourage our friends, our neighbors, our family members from embarking on what is otherwise an extremely dangerous journey, where in large part the only people who benefit are coyotes.
And don't even get me started on the coyotes statement there. You remember when I think Donald Trump brought it up in a debate with Joe Biden just last year, and social media just erupted. What is he doing talking about coyotes? Why is he talking about animals? They had no idea. That's what these smugglers are called. So she brings that up there at the end of that statement. Again, it's a dangerous journey. We really want to discourage it, and so on. The Supreme Court yesterday, this is from its blog, it says the Supreme Court unanimously ruled on Monday that non-citizens who have been granted temporary humanitarian relief from deportation cannot use the process known as adjustment of status to obtain lawful permanent residency in the United States without leaving the country. This is what the Biden administration wants. Just let these people get their permanent residency. How radical and extreme do you have to be for all nine justices on the Supreme Court to smack it down? All nine of them. Sotomayor. You can go right down the list of all the radical leftists on the court. Even they are trying to put the brakes on, at least to some degree. 9-0. That's unbelievable. That hardly ever happens. And it happened just yesterday. You've got Antiochus, the spirit of Antiochus, working behind the scenes, as I said yesterday. The attack, and you go back in that transition period from the election in 2016 through to the inauguration of Donald Trump, and then all of these things that Obama was setting up, putting in place so that he could attack his political enemies. And they're on the attack every day. Even as you see this groundswell of support, he's already got a majority of support because the election was stolen. Donald Trump increased his vote tally by millions and millions. And then you look at some of these votes just in Texas this week, these mayor races in McAllen, in Fort Worth. Well, how are these Republicans winning all of these races? If Donald Trump's a racist, Donald Trump is winning in the Rio Grande. The brown people are voting for Donald Trump in places like McAllen, Texas. Haven't had a Republican mayor in 23 years, and they just had one voted in over the weekend. And yet still, you have all these talking heads on TV crying out racist. Kamala Harris, by the way, she was greeted to some protesters in Guatemala with signs that said, Trump won. I mean, you're seeing those signs all over the United States right now. There was one this week in Fenway Park. It's in Boston. It's in New York. And Guatemala, as it turns out. The sign says, go home, Kamala, and Trump won. They know it. Everyone knows it. Kamala knows it. Joe Biden knows it. And so about all that they have left is, you're a racist. Listen to this exchange on MSNBC. This is someone who she speaks on MSNBC from time to time, and I believe she's one of the top editors for the New York Times, the newspaper of record. Listen to what she said this morning on, I believe, Morning Joe, clip 15.
Well, I was on Long Island this weekend visiting a really dear friend, and I was really disturbed. I saw, you know, dozens and dozens of pickup trucks with, explicatives against Joe Biden on the back of them, Trump flags, and in some cases just dozens of American flags.
What?
Pickups? You saw pickups? And U.S. flags? That's scary. What? That's all that they have left. Racist and Trump. Those are the two most used words coming from the Marxist radicals. Racism. She, if you heard her there, she said she was up in Long Island. Now, I know there's probably a few more Republicans in Long Island that there would be in Manhattan. But still, this is New York we're talking about. In Long Island, she sees Donald Trump supporters. And it's terrifying. It's disturbing to her. Just to support Donald Trump like all of those Latinos did in the Rio Grande just over the weekend. That's right. This filibuster that they want to eliminate, the Democrats do. You know, the same rule that they used something like 327 times last year. Now that fake Joe Biden is in office, they want to get rid of it so that they can just ram their policies through, the radical left. And so what are they saying about the filibuster? This rule that they used hundreds and hundreds of times just about 2 seconds ago. They're saying it's racist. Can you believe this? It's racist. Jonathan Turley had a piece this week exposing this hypocrisy, this new narrative that they're trying to create. And he gives quotes from Biden, Obama, all of them, Joe Obama and everyone associated with him, saying how crucial and critical and important the filibuster is for the party that's in the minority. I mean, this is democracy. We need it. We need it for the democracy to function. When they're in the minority, I mean the filibuster is all important. And now that they've got a slim majority, they want to get rid of the filibuster so that they can just ram everything through. 50 votes. Kamala Harris, the tiebreaker. And that's all that it would take. Says here, referring to when they loved the filibuster. It says, back then, the filibuster was the embodiment of democratic debate. And those words were echoed in the same newspapers and on the same television programs that now denounce the rule. It says, when Kristen Sinema recently made, she's the senator in Arizona, when Sinema recently made the same defense of the rule as Biden, Schumer, and Obama, she was attacked as mouthing specious, racist, or reactionary talking points. So now she's a racist. Because she happens to like the filibuster, like Obama did 2 seconds ago. She's a racist. Here, this New York Times editor, she takes a drive up to Long Island and sees pickup trucks, and it's disturbing. She writes for the New York Times, if you can believe it. She's terrified. And you heard Mika in the background, yes, I know, very scary, disturbing. Who's fueling this kind of hatred and division? Because here you have mayoral races in Fort Worth, in McAllen, in other cities. I forget the other cities in Texas. I have the story here somewhere. But who's fueling this hate, even as Republicans are turning out and voting for conservatives? They're voting for Trump supporters. And Trump supporters are winning in places where they don't cheat. So they're terrified. That's what they're terrified of. Not the actual Trump supporters. They're terrified of losing. And like my father, he's brought this out over and again. They will do anything to maintain their hold, their grip, their stranglehold on power. They'll do anything. They'll lie. They'll cheat. They'll scaremonger. Oh, yes. This is Barack Obama on CNN yesterday, clip 10.
I thought that there were enough guardrails institutionally that even after Trump was elected, that you would have the so-called Republican establishment who would say, okay, you know, it's a problem if the White House doesn't seem to be concerned about Russian meddling. Or it's a problem if we have a president who's saying that, you know, neo-Nazis marching in Charlottesville, they're good people on both sides.
So another lie, one of their favorites, this is how Joe Biden began his fake campaign a few years ago. Charlottesville. That's where Donald Trump said the neo-Nazis were good people. Total lie, blatant lie. He knows it, but he knows he's not going to get any pushback from Anderson Cooper, not a bit. So there he is, waxing eloquent, carrying on with the big lie, yet another one of many, the big lie. Listen, he talks about the Republican. Why can't the Republican establishment speak up? Well, listen to this particular Republican. Happens to be an African-American, and he was speaking up over the weekend. This was at a Republican convention in North Carolina. This is Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, clip 13.
9/11. People running away from those burning buildings, running away in horror. We saw policemen and firemen running to those buildings, basically running to their deaths to go help others because they saw trouble and they knew that they were needed. That's got to be us in this day right here. We've got to run to the trouble, folks. And what is the trouble? The trouble is the Biden administration that is seeking to turn this country into a socialist hole. The trouble is Antifa that wants to roam the streets and beat you into submission. The trouble is Black Lives Matter. It claims to care about the lives of black people, but it's turned a blind eye while violence in black communities are taking lives at a genocidal rate.
Wow, those are some strong words from a black man. What's the danger here? There he is, exposing Antifa, Black Lives Matter, turning a blind eye to all the violence, the murder, the mayhem happening in America, happening right now in American cities, especially last year. Does he count his voice, Candace Owens? And again, what about all the Latinos in McAllen? First mayoral victory for a Republican in 23 years. This is from National Review. It says Republicans swept key races. Keep in mind, this is the racist party, according to some of these talking heads you're listening to. Republicans swept key races from mayor in Texas on Saturday, setting back Democratic hopes that the state's urban areas will deliver statewide majorities for them in the future. They can't even win some of the urban areas, like Fort Worth. That's a big city. It's a little more conservative than Dallas, but still, it's a big city. It says here, most shocking, in McAllen, Texas, a border city of 150,000 people, of which 85% are Hispanic. Republicans elected their first mayor since 1997. 85% Hispanic. They're right at the border. They're seeing 178,000 people just stream across the border, migrants, illegally, every single month. Some of them coming from Romania and places in Europe, Eastern Europe. And they voted, would you believe it? They voted for the racist candidate. They voted for the Republican Party. What terrifies these Marxist revolutionaries is the thought of being voted out of office. And they will do anything to maintain their hold on power. MSNBC, this was an exchange with the Secretary of State in Arizona. She's a radical leftist. She doesn't want to see the forensic audit continue. So here they are again, nervously talking about the fact that evil racist Republicans have their hands on the ballots. They're actually examining the ballots. This is clip 7.
You know who knows how to count ballots? Our election officials. And who doesn't know how to count ballots are the cyber ninjas and all of their volunteers.
What is going on there? That's still happening. And what is it? How do you think about what this is?
You know, we've had concerns from the beginning going into this, and we outlined a lot of security measures that we hoped would be in place, which was flat out ignored by the Senate president and subsequently Ken Bennett, who's in charge of this this procedure. And then we had to go to court to force these folks to allow the press in, to require disclosure of the procedures so that we knew what was going on, and to allow our expert independent election observers in to be able to document everything that's happening. But overall, is just a blatant lack of any kind of best practices that you would see in a valid post-election audit, a lack of procedures that is really creating a lot of room for error and really an atmosphere for cooking the books to come up with whatever report they intend to come up with regarding the election that was over 6 months ago.
There's your election official saying that, look, when the audit is done, you can be sure that they've cooked the books. They're already preparing their viewers for the narrative, which will be that cyber ninjas can't count. A Republican can't count. Come on. Only election officials, the ones that we radical Democrats appoint, only they can be trusted. They did the count back in November, and then they should be doing the recounts. They should be evaluating their own performance. That's the kind of audits that we like. Here's Barack Obama again, preparing their viewers for when the results come in from Arizona, and those are due to come back by the way, next week. The count, or at least the count's going to be finished. The examination of those 2.1 million ballots. Some interesting next few weeks, I'd say. We'll keep our eyes on a lot of these developments. But here again is Barack Obama yesterday with Anderson Cooper, clip 9.
I think we have to worry when one of our major political parties is willing to embrace a way of thinking about our democracy that would be unrecognizable and unacceptable even 5 years ago or a decade ago. When you look at some of the laws that are being passed at the state legislative level, and when that's all done against the backdrop of large numbers of Republicans having been convinced wrongly that there was something fishy about the last election, we've got a problem.
We've got a problem. They're passing laws in state legislatures. You mean like the Constitution draws it up? Like the Constitution says that it should happen? We've got a problem, says Barack Obama. He's the puppet master. He's concerned. He's worried as well. We've got to do everything that we can to discredit this audit, this thorough examination of all that happened on November 3rd, all of it connected, as I said yesterday, to the attack, the bioweapon attack, the attack, not just from China, the attack from the Obama administration, lifting the ban on gain of function, January 9th, 2017. And then what? A day later, Anthony Fauci's out there saying there's going to be a surprise. A surprise, surprise. It wasn't much of a surprise, was it? Not to him anyway. A surprise pandemic. It's going to happen during the Trump administration, said Fauci. The man who was funding. He was funding all of that so-called research in the bioweapons lab in Wuhan, China. And then, of course, you know the story from a month or so ago. He's up there testifying, saying, we did not fund that Wuhan lab. And Rand Paul said, well, yes, you did. And you did it through this. You did it through the EcoHealth or whatever that name is. You did it through North Carolina and then on over to China. And more details coming out about the funding. First, let me just take you to a clip. This is from 2018. I played for you what Fauci was predicting just days after the gain-of-function ban was lifted by Barack Obama. And then this is what he said the next year. This is at a conference in 2018. Listen to him. He's basically justifying the gain-of-function and how they do have to be careful about the revelations that appear in journals and such because it can look kind of bad. This is Fauci. A few years ago, clip eight.
Anyway, so let me just go on about NIH lifts funding pause on gain-of-function research. So let me explain this a little, because whenever this comes out, there's always the pushing back and forth from the press. So like NIH now is going to do dangerous research. Plus, remember the trouble we used to get in when someone would do an experiment? They would submit it to a journal, and just as it's getting ready to go out, everybody would start scrambling around, should we be publishing, should it not? So we decided to go upstream from that and talk about decisions that are made by government-funded. I don't think this is going to be foolproof. Things are going to slip through, but I think this is a much better approach than we've had before.
He's one of the biggest proponents there is of gain-of-function. Now, he lied about that a few weeks ago. But this man loves it. He loves getting in there and making the virus more potent, making the virus more deadly. Why? Making the virus more infectious. Why? This is what the good scientists are doing. And you start pointing out holes in his stories, and he says, well, you're attacking science. That's another one of their favorite rejoinders. Racist, Trump, anti-science. You're anti-science if you criticize me. That's what he's out there saying. But you can hear for yourself. He said it himself. He loves gain of function. And really, that's a pretty nice sounding euphemism. It's really bioweapons technology. It's bioweapons research. And it was used as a weapon. As I said yesterday, there's no getting around the fact. Whether you maintain it was leaked or let out purposefully, there's no getting around the fact that China took steps to protect people outside of the Wuhan province, even as they encouraged travel to the Western world. Once the outbreak happened in Wuhan. How is that not a scandal? How is this man not being investigated? At least at Capitol Hill, under oath, right at the moment. Together with his colleague, Peter Daszak, he's the one heading up the Echo Health Alliance Group in North Carolina, and much has been made about the $3.4 million funding, government-funded research flowing through this man's organization, Daszak. This is from the Daily Mail, talking about the other money, the other government money that also flows through this channel. The Daily Mail, again, you have to go across the Atlantic to get a good expose on this, because so many in the propaganda media, they're just not going to be interested in revealing scandalous detail like this. It says, but federal grant data assembled by independent researchers shows that the charity has received more than $123 million from the government from 2017 to 2020. So right when the gain of function is lifted, or the ban on it, From that time period to today, this eco health group, $123 million in funding. It says, and one of the biggest funders is the Department of Defense, funneling almost $39 million to the organization since 2013. You got all these government agencies, the Department of Defense. You've got $64 million coming from the U.S. Agency for International Development, $13 million from Health and Human Services. I mean, these people get tens of millions of dollars. How much went to Wuhan? And why did Wuhan even get one penny? Well, we got to work with them, says Fauci, because that's where the bats are. So here they are developing bioweapons. Certainly the communists were. And it's got Fauci's nod of approval. Same with Daszak. It's crazy. These are traitors. They're right here in the United States of America. All of this traitorous, treasonous behavior. And it just goes on. It's worse than my father has said. It's much, much worse than people think. The Daily Mail says, former high-level Clinton administration staffer, Jamie Metzl, who now sits on the World Health Organization's Advisory Committee on Human Genome Editing, told Daily Mail that the Lancet letter, this is what Daszak put together last year in January and February. Remember, he came out with this letter signed by all these scientists to say that it wasn't engineered. It happened naturally. It just came from that Wuhan market. Somebody ate some bat soup, and then it spread. That Lancet letter, as I said yesterday, that was prepared. That was the strategy early on. We've got to tell people this did not start from the lab. It did not come from the lab. And why wouldn't they want that out? Because they were helping to fund the bioweapons technology. Yeah, that's right. Fauci. Dr. Anthony Fauci. Along with his colleague, Peter Daszak. That's pretty amazing. Well, there's this other story. I don't have time to get into all of it, but Fauci got this email January 31st last year. This guy, Christian Anderson, he's a virologist, and he was doing his own studies well over a year ago, January 31st, 2020, and this came out in the Fauci emails. He said the unusual features of the virus make up a really small part of the genome, so one has to look really closely at all the sequences to see that some of the features potentially look engineered. So Fauci was made aware of this by another colleague of his on January 31, 2020, before COVID-19 became a household word. It was engineered, says this individual. That was what was emailed in private. That same day, January 31, Anderson, in public, vehemently denied the lab leak theory. So somebody got to him after that email. There's no email in response from Fauci that I know of. But somehow or another, Anderson came out and flip-flopped the very day. He said, of course it can't be a lab leak. Well, you just emailed Fauci and said it was, or at least you said it was engineered. But now he's changing his tune. Who got to him? This seems like it would be worth investigating, don't you think? On Capitol Hill, perhaps? Who got to this man so that he flip-flopped? He wrote this. Thanks for looping me in to this other individual. I only had a very quick look at the link, but the analyses are completely flawed and wrong. They can be safely ignored. The analyses that it was engineered. So he was lying. They were all lying. They were all covering it up. And now it's being uncovered. Who let him in on it? The fact that this was being weaponized in some form or fashion. Here again, you have to do some of the connecting of the dots yourself. But there's enough there. There's enough there to know. And of course, we, knowing the spiritual dimension behind all of this, what was it that was in... It was one of my father's articles. I read this yesterday, but it's worth repeating. Treason in America and Britain. This is from a few months ago in the Trumpet magazine. If you're not subscribing to this magazine, you need to. You need to become a monthly subscriber so that you can know tomorrow's news today. Just call our operators 1-866-930-3024. and subscribe to The Trumpet today. My father wrote just a few months ago, "The situation in America and Britain is worse than most think. The people fighting the Trump administration are not just leftists, not just radical leftists, not just Marxist. They are inspired by the spirit of Satan." They are. They are. It's a satanic attack to blot out even the name of these Israelite nations. And you can certainly study more on that in this book, Herbert Armstrong's classic, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. You need to know, who is Israel today? Certainly, it's not this little strip of land that only started or became a state called Israel in 1948. So much of the Bible is directed at the Israelites. Prophecies regarding our nations. You need to know. Call our operators, 1-866-930-3024. Request The United States and Britain in Prophecy today. Here's that quote that I gave to you yesterday. It says, "God had to intervene in America and Britain like he intervened in ancient Israel, saving these nations by the hand of an end-time type of King Jeroboam II. It says, that's why the radical left is trying to destroy the Trump presidency through spying, through the Mueller investigation, through the Ukraine phone call impeachment, through the news media, through coronavirus politics, yes, through coronavirus, through the national debt, through the violence in the cities, through any means possible." Any means possible. This is what we're seeing in our country today. When we return from a short break, we'll talk about this spirit, the spirit of the devil, and where that originated. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Make sure that you take down our email address as well, td@thetrumpet.com. And that way you can submit some feedback. And when you do, try to give us a little bit of additional information besides your take on the show or your feedback on the show. Tell us how you listen to the program, where you listen from, how long you've been listening. These are all little tidbits that we certainly like to hear. So that's td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The correspondence course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
Isaiah chapter 14, we'll look at a few verses in this chapter. It's really more than a dual prophecy. Well, there certainly is duality there as well. But it's talking about a war in heaven that results in Satan being cast down to this earth. He was cut down the first time after he ascended to God's throne in an attempted coup. Satan knows a lot about how to fight against government, how to attempt a coup. But there's some duality to this prophecy as well, because it's also talking about an end-time event where Satan again challenged his maker and went after God and was again cast down to this earth. I don't have time to get into Revelation 12, where it talks about Satan and his demons being confined to this earth. That right there explains so much of what we're seeing in the world today. Just knowing that Satan has been cast down, knowing that he's deceiving the whole world, Revelation 12 and verse 9, this chapter in Isaiah, it really does address the root cause of Lucifer's downfall and him being cast out of heaven. Just look at the early verses here to get some context. It says in verse 1, "The Eternal will have mercy on Jacob and will yet choose Israel and set them in their own land, and the strangers shall be joined with them, and they shall cleave to the house of Jacob." So we've skipped over Isaiah 13, where you read about the fall of Babylon, and then it's talking here at the early part of chapter 14 about the deliverance of Israel. Verse 2, it says, "And the people shall take them and bring them to their place, and the house of Israel shall possess them in the land of the Eternal for servants and handmaids, and they shall take them captives, whose captives they were, and they shall rule over their oppressors. And it shall come to pass in the day that the Eternal shall give you rest from your sorrow and from your fear and from the hard bondage wherein you were made to serve." So the people of Israel just projecting ahead now into the wonderful world of tomorrow. The people of Israel finally becoming the example nation that God always meant for them to be. We're certainly not setting a righteous example for the world to see today, the people of America or Britain. Certainly not. Verse 4, it says, "That you shall take up this proverb against the king of Babylon and say, how has the oppressor ceased? The golden city ceased." So this is speaking of the modern successor of Nebuchadnezzar, the one that's going to rule the final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. "Take up" means to utter or to speak. So there's a message. There's a message God's work needs to deliver, not just to Manasseh and Ephraim, but also to this king of Babylon as well. Verse 5 says, "The Eternal has broken the staff of the wicked and the scepter of the rulers. He who smote the people in wrath with a continual stroke, he that ruled the nations in anger, is persecuted, and none hinders." And so, again, the punishment that he brought on others, it's going to be brought on him as well. Verse 7, it says, "The whole earth is at rest and is quiet. They break forth into singing. Yea, the fir trees rejoice at you, and the cedars of Lebanon, saying, since you are laid down, no feller has come up against us." So the earth finally enters into a very quiet and peaceful time once this Babylonian system is finally crushed. Verse 9, it says, "Hell from beneath is moved for you to meet you at the coming." Your coming, it says, "it stirs up the dead for you, even all the chief ones of the earth. It has raised up from their thrones all the kings of the nations." It says, "All they shall speak and say unto you, are you also become weak as we? Are you become like unto us?" It says, "Your pomp is brought down to the grave, and the noise of your vials," it says, "the worm is spread under you, and the worms cover you." So this is, again, right at the beginning of the millennium, and you can read in the book of Revelation how that the beast and the false prophet are thrown into this fiery grave and this lake of fire right there in Jerusalem. It's going to be burning continually throughout the millennium as a reminder of what God had to do to get our attention, to bring us to the point where we could finally have peace, unity, quiet, rest, as it says there in verse 7. Now notice verse 12. Again, you see that, some of the context before it gets into these verses about Lucifer. Verse 12, it says, "How are you fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How are you cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nations? So God talks about this man initially heading up this evil movement, this final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. And then this talks about the spirit behind the man, which is what my father was saying in that article I quoted just before the end of the last segment. There is a real spirit world. The devil certainly does exist. Your Bible says he's the god of this world. Before he rebelled and fought against God, he was Lucifer. And that name means light bringer. God created him to bring light to the earth. And instead he turned to darkness and started to use his awesome power and energy for wickedness, for deceit. And he deceived a third of the angels who are now demons. Here is this great being taught at the throne room of God and then given all of this responsibility on earth. And look at what he did with it. Verse 13 says, "For you have said in your heart, I will ascend into the heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north." I'm going to take my throne and I'm going to put it above God's throne. I don't want God to rule me. I don't want God to have final say. Verse 14 says, "I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High." That's Lucifer rebelling against his maker, turning to lawlessness, turning to iniquity and sin. Ezekiel 28:15, it says, "You were perfect in your ways from the day that you were created until iniquity was found in you. You were perfect until lawlessness was found in you." My father had this to say in the Ezra Nehemiah booklet. Satan was the epitome of talent. He had the ability to produce great good on this earth and throughout the universe, but all of his great talent went to his head. He fell victim to his own vanity. He developed one great catastrophic flaw. He rebelled against God's law and government. All of his talent is now being directed toward rebellion and destruction. And then he says, finally, "Talent and ability have their place in God's work, but we must acknowledge that talent and ability take a back seat to being close to God. Above all, we've got to be close to God. It doesn't matter how much talent and ability we might have." Most of us, I think, don't have much of it. God has called the lowly of this world, but as Herbert Armstrong used to say, he didn't call us to stay there. We need to educate ourselves in the laws of God. This same prophet, the prophet Isaiah, there's a memory verse over in Isaiah 8 and verse 20. It says, "To the law and to the testimony, if they speak not according to this word, it's because there's no light in them." We've got to return to the law and to the testimony of God. God's law is what lit up Lucifer to be such a brilliant light throughout the universe before he turned to lawlessness, before he turned to destruction and darkness. As my father said, talent and ability have their place, even in God's work. But we must acknowledge that talent and ability take a back seat to being close to God. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily, broadcast to you live every day on our website, thetrumpet.com/live. I gave you the email address earlier. Write it down so you can write us, td@thetrumpet.com. Thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.